are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
To bring you Finding Your Forte Talk Radio Show on Up to Me Radio. We are really, really excited to bring a special guest to you today, Cyril Turner, and I'll introduce him here shortly. But I'd like to first thank Shante Khan, the artist that sings the song at the top of the show. It's an amazing track that I like to keep in my music rotation. The song is Free Your Dreams, and definitely track the song down by going to the site where the show is hosted and download it. It's something I think will do great things for empowerment and encouragement for the pursuits of purpose. And speaking of purpose, today is extremely elated experience for me personally, as we get an opportunity to bring pursuit of purpose in business and careers to a bit of an elevated level, and have a good sound discussion about how organizations and workplaces and talent and leadership development can embrace purpose in a more meaningful way, as a way to inspire and engage people to get their best performance, to grow their careers, and to build themselves as leaders. So I'm excited to introduce you to a new friend for over the last few months, who's been amazingly abundant and generous with his time and stewardship of not only mine, but other professionals in the city. I'd like for you to meet my friend Cyril Turner.
Well, thank you very much, Reggie. I appreciate your introduction.
Absolutely. This is a no-brainer for me, so I appreciate that you carved out time to spend with us today. I'm excited about this for a number of reasons, and it may embarrass him a little bit, but I got to give you a little background on how all the pieces that came to bring this moment to us, and because I think it illustrates humility and the abundance and stewardship that I have quickly come to know Cyril for. So I do an occasional newsletter. I would like to say monthly newsletter, but it doesn't quite happen. That's another story. Cyril saw as a previous contact is on my distribution list, and saw that we were promoting one of the businesses that we've helped launch from a purpose perspective is My Fair Lady Macarons. And he saw this post and he thought, man, this would be great to share this experience with a business that he's mentoring, right?
Right.
And so
yes.
That would be great if you could just, kind of tell us how that experience has unfolded for you.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a young lady I met who has a company called A Hot Cookie. And, she has fabulous gourmet cookies, and based right in Atlanta, not too far from the Delta offices,
right.
Actually.
Okay.
And I just thought there could be a point of contact these two women who, own their respective businesses,
right,
that are complementary, to get to know one another and maybe,
right,
learn from one another.
Right.
And so I saw that connection and wanted to facilitate it. And now they've since met and have shared ideas and are collaborating now. So glad I made that connection.
And facilitate you did. I mean, it was what I thought was outstanding about it was, it's not as if you have some shortage of time to just be, distracted around small businesses in
sure.
the area, but it, for you, it clearly isn't a distraction. I mean, it's been, you know, kind of central to, you know, to who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that made an early and profound statement mm-hmm. about the spirit of stewardship you have for the legacy you're leaving in terms of connecting, not just, you know, the strong performing, you know, business that you
mm-hmm.
run,
mm-hmm.
But all of the people and the businesses
mm-hmm.
that you have the opportunity to connect. So on behalf of all of those people, I want to thank you for bringing
sure.
that.
Thank you.
And I think it's been, you know, really profound thing for us to be able to discover and to be able to share with others.
Right. Well, you know, it's sort of what I do
yeah.
and enjoy connecting people. But the other thing I've come to realize is throughout the years, I've mentored a lot of individuals within companies. And that, you know, certainly has, you know, the potential to help that one individual. But when you are mentoring a company, it's a further reaching
mm-hmm.
impact. And so that's something that I've been intentional about, to sort of shift my attention from individuals to more small businesses,
okay.
Just because it can have more impact.
Okay.
And I enjoy entrepreneurship. So being able to connect, folks who are trying to build something is just really rewarding. So
okay.
I think I'm the biggest beneficiary.
That's outstanding and incredibly abundant spirit that I feel like is something that we all can be inspired to, you know, seek in ourselves and a way that we can operate. I think that's really inspiring for people to want to embrace that in themselves. And so, you know, by you doing it, you liberate people to free, you know, to do it for themselves. So I appreciate that.
Sure.
But we, you know, so that I think is the beginning of our story. But I am, you know, in a lot of ways elated at the opportunity to catch you just at this point, you know, in your career. I really, you know, in the way that we promoted the discussion that we're going to have today, you know, and similar to the, you know, what we did at the conference, and Cyril was to be a speaker at the On Purpose conference earlier, and then he had a personal family emergency to take care of, and he had to leave the conference. But I knew then that we would give him the opportunity to have to bring that same message, and so now we're just bringing it in a different format. But what I am excited about the opportunity to bring our listeners today is to have you share insights from, you know, kind of the pinnacle of your career and your, you know, really strong business performance that you've been able to lead. And in order to kind of set that up, I think it will be really great if you don't mind giving us a bit of a, you know, bird's eye view of your career to date.
Sure.
Give us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got here, and then, you know, and then where, you know, where you are today.
Okay. So I'll start with education. I started out as a professional student of sorts, I went through a dual degree program between Morehouse and Georgia Tech, earning degrees in physics and mechanical engineering simultaneously. While at Morehouse and Georgia Tech, learned of a program at Harvard Business School that literally changed my life, and it was a week-long program. Up until that point, I thought I was going to be an engineer. And I had a number of summer internships working as an engineer, and they were fine. Thoroughly enjoyed studying engineering, but learned about this program to introduce minorities to graduate management education. And because of that 1 week, I changed my focus to going to get an MBA. And so upon graduation, went straight to Wharton at the University of Pennsylvania. And while there, did an exchange program at the London Business School, and really enjoyed studying business. Started my career in consulting, then went to Frito-Lay, and ultimately was CFO for the Southeast. We had great performance there, won the top award in the company, and the best performance in the company's history at the time. Then moved to the Coke Company, where I led a team to really do what they called Salesforce automation at the time, was business process reorganization, and changing the way they did business development. Then from there went to Coke Enterprises, where I was CFO for Eastern North America, and then following that, ended up running the Atlanta division for, which is really most of Georgia, for Koch Enterprises. During that time, we launched the 12-pack package, which at the time was unproven. Mm. And Atlanta is arguably the soft drink capital of the world.
Right.
And so here our team, you know, was launching this unproven package and was highly, highly visible. And fast forward, it is now the industry standard for both the beer and soft drink markets worldwide. And so our team, you know, was able to get that launched. And then from there, took some time to work on a personal patent. So for about a year and a half, had the opportunity to spend time with the family, help my wife with her dermatology practice, and also be able to work on my invention. And then when not looking for a job, ended up at Delta. And really did three things at Delta. One was to run Delta Global Services. That was a turnaround of sorts. During that time, we quadrupled the number of employees. We're now 20,000 employees. And if we were a standalone company in Atlanta, we'd be the 13th largest company by employee count in Atlanta, and in the top third of the Fortune 500. Also ran Delta Private Jets, and that too was a turnaround situation, and highly unprofitable when I inherited it. And at the time, we had 5 jets, and fast forward to now, it's north of 70 jets, and doubling profits consecutive years, and so that was a very good experience. And also ran Delta Connection, which are the 6 airlines that fly for Delta, one of which they actually own, which is Endeavor, and had responsibility for that as well, and had operational performance and improvements during that time in a very, very difficult part of the industry. And so that's what's brought me to now from a career standpoint.
That's outstanding. And there's so many significant milestones, even if at the time they seemed – you know, just kind of you doing your job, uh-huh. what they unfolded to be, particularly this innovation around the 12-pack.
Uh-huh.
But then even the turnarounds and the strong performance around the part of Delta Global Services uh-huh. That you just recently retired from running uh-huh. is really, you know, at the pinnacle of its performance, uh-huh. having another, you know, strong year.
Yes.
There's something to be said for having the opportunity to connect really strong performances that I would imagine you're probably pretty humble about. Mm-hmm. But the track record speaks volumes, you know, on its own. It's the merits of it. I think are, you know, give, you know, people something inspiring to think about in terms of the way they lean into, you know, their careers and bring, you know, position themselves in the best experiences that seem to be the right fit for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to that extent, you know, can you talk about the way you typically have approached how to make the right decisions about like what's next for you?
Right.
You know, is there a magic formula to how you kind of created this string of successes that we can look at the glimpse of how, the decisions you make with regard to careers, or has it, you know, been more organic in nature and these opportunities came and, you know, or were you, you know, more intentional long-term in terms of where your trajectory was headed? How do you typically approach it?
So part of it's just leaping out on faith, but then there's an element of luck. But then the part that I control is around looking at it from an optionality standpoint and really looking at what I can gain from that can take me to the next level. And so whenever I'm making a career decision, I'm thinking about not only the immediate move, but what that could lead to afterwards and what skills I'm going to gain in the interim as well to make myself more marketable into the future. The other thing I've come to learn is to find organizations that are underperforming or areas that are underperforming and being able to take it to another level. And a couple of examples of that, When I took on Delta Global Services, it was run by someone who spent his entire career in aviation. And nothing wrong with that, but here I am, an outsider coming into the aviation industry and just really having a different perspective and looking at the business in a very different way. And reputationally at the time, the business was not in a very good spot. I'm glad to say now it's a really, really integral part of Delta and helps to differentiate Delta from its competitors. So much so that because we do work for other airlines, I'm still saying we, even though I'm retired, so forgive me for that.
No,
but,
there's nothing different here. Like
but at any rate, we do work for other airlines. It's one of these things where we are able to demonstrate a model that they, a couple of airlines have since adopted and try to create their own version of Delta Global Services.
Okay.
And so, you know, no, one of the biggest points of flattery is when someone tries to imitate your model.
Absolutely.
And that's certainly been the case.
Yeah.
But we've also learned in the process that they cannot take away the work that they currently have with us just because the performance is so good. And so it's sort of an interesting dynamic in the industry. So a long answer to that question.
No, it's a good answer, though, and I think it's really helpful. What I took out of that, when we, you know, as you are aware, we're big advocates of, you know, finding, you know, kind of personal passions mm-hmm. through the work that you do and, mm-hmm. you know, creating, being really intentional about creating opportunities that tap into those passions.
Right.
Sounds like you've got this glutton for punishment thing of, like, taking underperforming, you know, organizations and turning and creating turnaround situations,
yes. Yes.
Which I would say, I think there are probably a string of companies now that really appreciate that you that's something that you're passionate about. Do you recall that you were intentional about that being one of the things that you attracted you to each opportunity, or was it, you know, just kind of like, you know, here we go again?
Well, it's one of these things that it was sort of accidental learning.
Yeah.
But want to recognize that that's sort of what I bring to the table. If I were to go out and run another business in the future, that's something I would take into consideration.
Okay.
It's harder to tweak a well-performing organization
right.
and getting that next level of performance. The other thing is by getting a reputation of doing turnarounds, really positions you well, and there are an infinite number of organizations that aren't performing well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you will work forever if you get that skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of that is, you know, just looking at it from a different perspective. I think from my consulting experience, I learned how to work in different industries and understand the key metrics and so forth. The biggest thing I would say in terms of turnarounds is really the people and really understanding, you know, the business from the people standpoint and really recognizing the talents in the organization and then proceeding accordingly.
That I'm glad you went there. I mm-hmm. certainly want to go there.
Okay.
You know, do you have any observations or, you know, lessons to share from, because that's really rich opportunity and teachable moment
mm-hmm.
to look at what you need to do from a talent and leadership development perspective in organizations where the business is underperforming. Mm-hmm. I would imagine you're dealing with challenges in morale,
mm-hmm.
Lower engagement. You know, probably not a lot of people that are leaning into their purpose,
sure,
you know,
sure.
in their career.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine you probably had to, in a lot of ways, play cheerleader, accountability partner, mm-hmm. you know, professional coach
mm-hmm.
for people within that, you know, kind of string of experiences.
Right.
Do you have any, you know, kind of observations of either how you traditionally approach that mm-hmm. situation or what you've seen be most successful in that string of experiences?
Well, two things. One is I'm a keen observer of other leaders, and I have learned over the years that, leaders that are really engaged with the workforce really get the most out of the business. And so one of the intentional things I do when I first start with the company is I spend time with the frontline employees. So when I was at Frito-Lay, for example, I started out riding on route trucks and working in the distribution center and working in the manufacturing area and really working in entry-level type positions just to learn the business. Mm-hmm. Through that, you kind of have a, and it's now called undercover boss. So little at the time did I know that that's what it would become. Yeah. But you can get the most information about the, how the organization truly runs by working with frontline employees early on. When I worked at Coke Enterprise, the same sort of thing, you know, riding route trucks and so forth. But really just getting to know people's people and being seen as just a regular guy. When I started at Delta Global Services, I ended up taking the entry-level training on how to run ramp operations at an airport. And little did I know that people pay a lot of attention to that. Mm-hmm. And so early on, I got the reputation of being able to do any job that, you know, was asked. That probably stems from something my dad said growing up. And he said, you know, son, I will never ask you to do anything I wouldn't do myself. And so tacitly, that is something that in organizations, if you do the entry-level jobs as the new leader, it kind of clears the air that, one, you're just an ordinary person, that you too, you know, aren't, you know, it's not beneath you to go and do those jobs. Mm-hmm. And then there are occasions where, you know, I would go out and do the entry-level jobs, like around holidays when it's busy or something, and have the extra touch and, you know, wish people well during holidays and so forth in person while helping, you know, get the operation going is something that, you know, is appreciated. So, and frankly, that's what I enjoy doing, too.
Yeah, I'm chuckling as you share that experience because, you know, I'm a keen observer of, you know, people and talent, particularly leaders as well. And I like seeing affirmations like the one you just shared demonstrated. And I'll tell you that early on in our getting to know each other, when Charlotte and I had the opportunity to visit you, I remember specifically as we were crossing the street, and you might not remember, this is probably you just being yourself, but you... There was a guy that crossed the street against the crosswalk,
right?
And you had a conversation with him, like, and I'm sure, you know, for him, this guy was just, you know, trying to go to the cafeteria to get snacks, but here he was face to face with the president of Delta Global Services, talking to him about, you know, keeping him safe,
right?
It's like, and that's, I think, iconic and a great illustration of what, exactly what you mean, like, you know, no one is above reproach, you know, having a conversation about the things that we should embrace and what's in it for you. And, you know, I just remember observing that conversation and it all being framed around, hey, we just want you to be safe. I can, you know, wholeheartedly double underscore and exclamation point that that's the way you live and work in a day, in your day to day life.
Well, it's that actually came through SVP of safety and compliance. We hired a very talented lady who started talking safety. One thing that we, and given that we're in the airline industry, you know, that's paramount. But one of the things that she's done is very much changed the culture. The crosswalk is one example of it. Mm-hmm. I used to run, you know, go against the light and all that.
Right.
But then when she framed it in a way that, you know, and things that you do day to day, will manifest itself when it matters, you know, when you're handling an operation. And so she's very much changed the culture where now we're paying attention to crosswalks.
Right.
And, you know, one thing I learned from her, now this is someone that works for me, so this gets to the point of you can learn from everybody regardless of level.
Right.
Whenever, you know, starting a meeting of any type, we start with a safety moment. And the safety moment, the intent of it is change your mindset around thinking about safety all the time. And so we talk about not only safety in a professional environment and in operations and do's and don'ts and key observations, but also on the personal level too. And it has helped tremendously in terms of our safety performance.
Okay.
Last year, both our damage rate and injury rate were at all-time lows, and significant improvement.
Wow.
And so I credit her with that and sort of the mindset piece of thinking about safety all the time.
That's outstanding. I you know, given the attention there is around the airline industry as of late, you know, with the incident with United Airlines, and, you know, that's a little bit of a diversion off of our conversation, but I think that there is a connect when you think about the importance of, you know, sustaining a brand that's built on safety and the important and how much that is a buying factor for consumers that are, you know, just kind of want to get where they're going, A to
sure.
B,
sure.
You know, there's a number of things that I just think I was smart enough to schedule a conversation with Cyril just after that, you know, viral incident and just after, you know, you recently retired. But so in some ways it's dumb luck, but I think that, you know, since we have you here, it will be really great. Like, can you share a moment, just kind of give us, you know, a glimpse into how inside an organization of a scale might be processing, you know, managing the brand and reputation around an incident like that that's just kind of seemingly gotten out of control, and, you know, how you and or Delta approaches thinking through those kinds of situations?
I'm not as close to the incidents that, you know, that happened over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Since I'm weeks into retirement, I don't have an insider's view on that.
Right.
But, you know, there is a lot of intent around, you know, having a good product and making sure that customers have a great experience. And also Delta in particular has a very, very strong mindset around measuring everything and then being able to control their destiny in a large way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a quick example. Years ago, Jet A fuel was very, very expensive. It's, you know, a third of the cost structure, roughly. And oil was trading at a very high level per barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was due to speculation in the market. And so with the mindset that they could control their destiny, they did a lot of lobbying efforts. They did a lot of things to try to, you know, get the oil prices, you know, more in line. And so finally, they learned of a refinery that was scuttled, and so they ended up buying the refinery outright. And not only did they have capacity for, you know, of being able to do the processing of the oil into Jet A fuel, and therefore reducing the price, they also made an arrangement to sell fuel byproducts to third parties.
Okay.
And so, you know, the price of oil went from a, you know, plus, you know, $100 a barrel range, to, you know, the 30s range,
mm-hmm.
or high 20s. And that was a significant impact in terms of Delta's bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are very much have the mindset they can control their destiny. And so that was a big learning for me in that experience.
Outstanding. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, what we can, you know, take away from that is the notion of being intentional about what you want your destiny to be. I mean, and from a corporate perspective, that makes sense. I think that oftentimes some of the amazing talent that we bring to the table to help frame up what that looks like for organization is paramount. It's really important. You know, what I often challenge other leaders to do is to take that same mentality in terms of and apply it to their own individual performance, their own individual career trajectory, you're figuring out what their North Star is, and working towards that. You know, if you think about where you are, just kind of, you know, having recently retired from, you know, kind of being at the pinnacle of your own business performance and career, you know, what, you know, as you're at the top of this mountain, that's the analogy I like to embrace, as you're at the top of this mountain and you're looking down to, you know, others that you clearly have laid a path for them, you know, to follow and use as an example, you know, what kind of directions would you, you know, would you share? Like what are some of the things that, as you see young talented leaders coming behind you, if you had a moment with to share with them things that, you know, if you knew then what you know now about climbing that mountain, you know, what are some things that you would share?
You know, I'm coming back to something that we talked about earlier, and that is, it's all about the people, flat out, and creating an environment that good ideas can come out, creating an environment that people want to work in, to reward people to, you know, for great performance, setting challenging goals and then feel accomplished once you reach those goals. Those are some of the things I would say. I'm a big person on measurement and making sure that we hit our targets and so forth. But to enjoy the journey, we spend the preponderance of our time at work, and you may as well enjoy it. And that kind of gets to the turnaround mentality too, in that, you know, people who are in sort of an underperforming environment really want to do the right thing. They just need to have the right leadership to be able to get to where they need to go. And so giving them that vision, and then also speaking to the rewards that will, you know, come forth as a result. And then once you have wins, to really make them a big deal and celebrate those wins, I think is an important component too. And once you get that going, it sort of success builds on success, and then you just keep building and building and building. And it really creates a institutional confidence that we could continue growing and getting better. And so I would say those are some of the things that I focus on, and I would share with someone early in their career.
That's outstanding, and you know, institutional confidence keeps echoing. I really appreciate that is something to take away from that conversation. You know, people are listening in, or anything like me, they're on the edge of their seat in this conversation. So I'm going to ask you to sit there for just a moment. We're going to take a small break. And after this break, we'll come back and continue the conversation with Cyril, that we'll pivot and then talk a little bit more candidly and pointedly around purpose and like how we can embrace it more in our talent and leadership development space. So so just after the break, we'll continue the conversation.
We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new uplifting and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalist, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn. Less stuff, more meaningful life. And an up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels. And so much more. So get your subscription today at uptomemagazine.com. That's up2magazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
Well, we are back. And if you're just tuning in, we are here with Cyril Turner. He is taking us into a really insightful conversation and just shared some, I think, really inspiring nuggets about how to approach being intentional about business performance in your career. And as you might imagine, as advocates for bringing purpose to business and careers, we definitely want to take advantage of the opportunity to have him think visionary, if you will, and give us some insights with regard to what our workplace might look like when, you know, pursuit of purpose, alignment of talent and leaders with passions, gifts, and motivations becomes more the norm and not necessarily the exception. I think that in our current environment, you know, people do it, and it's more out of kind of personal heroics. They're doing it on their own. They are, you know, investing in themselves and using that as a light to illuminate the path that they're moving towards. But all too often we see our colleagues, you know, kind of suffer the consequences of being, you just, you know, showing up to work and continue, you know, doing their job kind of as it's handed to them each day without being intentional about lighting a path to where they would like to connect their own purpose and mission to the mission of the organization. Mm-hmm. So you know, if we can, if you don't mind for a moment, just kind of joining me in this conversation about what that transformation like might look like for organizations to be more intentional, to encourage more people and even invest in, you know, put in place resources and guidance for people to be more intentional about connecting their own purpose to the purpose of the organization. You know, what are the merits and trade-offs from that kind of transformation from your perspective?
Yeah, well, I would say the thing that would that resonates for me is trying to understand what success looks like, and from a broader organizational standpoint, but also individuals. I spend a lot of time stopping people in the hall and trying to understand what they do, and then also understand what is success, what does it look like to them, and how they're measuring it. I'm really listening for, you know, their view of success and how that aligns with the organization as a whole. And sometimes that gives an opportunity to do course corrections. And you can get more accomplished in, you know, a break room where you kind of bump into individuals and really understand, you know, a lot about what they do day to day and how they fit into the bigger puzzle. And but at the same time, casting that through the leaders that report to you too. And a lot of reinforcement, a lot of communication that, you know, is somewhat repetitive. I'll give you a quick example.
Yeah,
of
sure.
At Delta Global Services, we had this thing called IRP, and each letter had a meaning to it. And so the I was around integrity, and there are two forms of integrity. There's integrity to people, and there's integrity to process. So first, on the people part, we very much have an open door policy where, you know, people come in and, you know, can say whatever's on their mind. To have freedom of information, to have a certain spirit of trust, to get an answer to somebody and be very, you know, honest in the answer, regardless of, you know, how comfortable it is to give that answer. If you don't have the answer, you know, to make a promise to get back to that person with the answer, sort of thing. And so the integrity piece is around being treated the way you want to be treated. On the integrity to people, integrity to process, since, you know, safety is a big deal in the business. You know, you don't get injuries, you don't have damages if you follow the process. It's when you're taking shortcuts that bad things happen. And so having the integrity to process is key as well. And then the R is around revenue growth, you know, and, you know, being a going concern, trying to continue to grow. And and so that's, you know, something that we're very focused on. And then the P is productivity. You're using the resources in the right way. And so I repeated the IRP mantra all the way through lots of times. And, you know, when you say things multiple times and it's consistent, it's a very good way to be able to communicate, you know, your vision. And and to get it at all levels of the organization. And so that was my approach to doing that. And I actually learned that through a leader I worked with years ago at Frito-Lay. So, again, paying attention to other leaders is where you pick up things like that.
Yeah, that's outstanding. And you would like to think that that is the norm in terms of how leaders approach it. I think I'm sometimes frustrated when I learn that it really is the exception, that people lean more into leaders lead more into their leadership, you know, givings as opposed to their manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, what I heard most out of that, just caring enough about that individual to really ask some of the, you know, kind of basic questions about, you know, where they see themselves headed. Oftentimes I'm working with, you know, clients that have invested in themselves, and through our work, we discover things about them that through the conversations, it becomes evident that their leaders don't even know about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I often encourage them to have, you know, the conversations to share that. But it, you know, it baffles me how often leaders don't have really foundational insights about their people and how they're, it's such a missed opportunity mm-hmm. to engage people in a much more compelling way. Mm-hmm. And you see it show up when, in things like retention. Mm-hmm. So how often have you have someone really valued in your organization decide to leave to go somewhere else? And, you know, 6 months or a year down the road, you hear what they're either what they left to do or the mm-hmm. thing that they announced as they were leaving. And you thought, man, had I known that was something mm-hmm. you really wanted to do, mm-hmm. we could have even framed up opportunities to do that either within your role or position that on your trajectory. And so what happens is, and just the investment that people, that leaders and organizations make in, you know, building people and their capability and learning, okay. they lose out on that investment because that individualized attention didn't occur.
Well, I want to, I'll come to that question in a minute, okay. but you touched on something else that's really, really important. And that is to really get to know people as people. In my organization, particularly in the headquarters group, I know something personal about everybody. Mm-hmm. I know the lady who, I know the janitor that works there very well. And I say that because regardless of level, I want to know people very well. I, you know about their families. I know about situations they may be going through. And just really talking to people as people is really critical. And what I have found is when you get to know individuals on that level, they'll be willing to work really hard. They stick around. They tend to not leave for, you know, reasons other than if there's a better opportunity out there. The thing I would also say is I don't necessarily discourage people from leaving to a better, bigger and better opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I do that from the mindset of I have their interests at heart. More so than the company. And a lot of folks won't say that.
Right.
But if they're going to be happier elsewhere, then, you know, so be it. I have seen instances where people will leave and then come back,
mm-hmm.
Or at least make an attempt to come back, you know, to the extent that there's, you know, something available for them to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to the health of the culture, too, in that they missed the experience and they wanted to go outside to find something else, only to find that it wasn't as good as, you know, staying there. So good example of that, there's a young man who was with the company, started on entry level, was a supervisor, went to go to NetJets of all places, and did very well there, and then came back to the company. And he got more and more responsibility, having responsibility for a very large operation and then taking a regional role and moving up. And I'm a huge advocate for education. So it so happened the two of us were at a conference, or we were at a large conference, and he happened to be seated next to me. And he mentioned that he wanted to go, or he's considering business school. And I took time to say, listen, you need to do it. Figure out how to do it. Here are the schools you need to look at. And just gave him some advice. Fast forward, he went on his own dime to get an MBA from Harvard while still working for us.
Yeah.
And now is going to be one of our future presidents, I have no doubt,
wow.
In the company. So this is someone who went from an entry-level position, worked his way up, went away, took the advice of getting an MBA, and then ultimately is doing well, and I see him as a future leader in the organization. So that is something that's really rewarding from a leader standpoint, to see someone grow like that sort of in front of your eyes. But then you need to be intentional about, you know, positioning people for the future.
Well, what a phenomenal, I'm really glad you took the time to share that because there's so many nuggets that I think that we can, you know, decompress that and make some observations about it. And one of the things that I'd like to take your attention to is, you know, we're often talking to leaders, and this whole notion of bringing purpose in the workplace sometimes meets resistance,
sure.
Particularly from leaders mm-hmm. that, and they're not always, you know, expressive about saying it, but I can read it on their face.
Sure.
When they're trying to kind of process what it's like, what it might, what the impact of embracing pursuit of purpose for their talent might do in terms of having people aspire for something that is outside the organization. And they're dealing with the anxiety or the fear that they might be, you know, encouraging someone to lay out a path that might be outside their organization. And oftentimes, and I appreciate it when that, when they actually say it, so we can at least have the conversation, but it's more frustrating when they don't say it.
Right.
And the reason why they don't, you know, embrace the opportunity or the, you know, this, I think this accelerator on personal career and business performance of purpose, they don't, because that is an anxiety that they have, is that they, you know, laying out this career path might be, you know, something that they end up, you know, ushering someone, you know, right out through the door into the competition in this example, right?
Right.
I just really think that's a profound learning. And then, so if you were to share what's behind that thinking and like how that has been successful, you know, for you to leaders that might be processing that anxiety.
Sure.
You know, what would you share?
So I have a strong opinion about that.
Okay.
And that is sometimes that your talent is better elsewhere. And what I find is that if you are not satisfied in what you're doing, if you're not learning, if you're not reaching your full potential, you may be better suited to go someplace else, and that's fine. What I find is that people who've been in an organization for a long time have a high degree of anxiety, you know, in terms of here they've been in this nurturing environment, they know the lay of the land, their work has kind of become rote, and they're just, you know, there's a fear of the unknown. And let's face it, I've been in 5 different businesses and, you know, I'm comfortable making transitions, and there's life after, you know, whatever environment you're in right now. It's just a matter of finding it. And I really view it from not so much of what I'm giving up in an organization, but what I potentially have to learn by going to another organization. Mm-hmm. And, you're always trying to, improve your skill set, to create more demand for your talents. Why not go someplace else and demonstrate that you can turn around or improve an operation and have that opportunity to do so? And if your current environment is such that you're not being able to move the needle, then probably it's an indication it's time to look for something else. And that is perfectly fine. I think, you know, for me, I remember points of anxiety earlier in my career, but part of the reason I got the education I earned and the work experiences I've you know, been able to get is so that I have that optionality to be able to do different things. And so it's not an all bad thing to recognize it's time to move on and to do so.
And I mean, even with the story that you share, it sounds like I would imagine if I can get in the head of the young man that you're talking about, you know, he has a long charted track record of you caring enough about him as an individual from entry level through his decision to rejoin the organization that, frankly, I think is exceptional. Maybe hard to find. Mm-hmm. Maybe he didn't get it in his other organization.
Right.
And so just, you know, I would imagine that the spirit that you bring to connecting with each and every individual and, you know, these frontline conversations that you have just in the hallway and in the crosswalks on the street, you know, have people that will run through a brick wall for you. And that is at the core of, you know, the strong form performance, and sounds like, you know, these turnaround situations that you've been able to usher in through your leadership.
So that is really, really rewarding. And the one byproduct of that is, and I didn't expect this at all, but years after leaving organizations, I run into frontline people and I still remember something about them personally. I remember once there's a young man who, approached me and became teary-eyed. And I recognized him and remember working with him, and years had passed. And he said, I don't know if you know this, but you remember that I mentioned that it was my birthday and you went and got me a birthday cake. You said, you're the only person other than my mother to ever get me a birthday cake.
Wow.
And so I don't do the things I do for an effect other than to recognize people as people. What I didn't expect was something like that. And I have great occasion to run into people all the time that I just remember from another experience, and it's a positive, you know, interaction. Quick aside, my family hates it when I go out and I run into people. And I run into people all the time in different places and all that. And my kids joke with me and they're like, okay, how long is this one going to take, you know, to have this conversation? But just really, you know, taking time to care about people is everything. And that's what makes the world turn.
Well, I have seen that as well. When you had Charlotte and I, and we walked across the street to the cafeteria, and it was a long trek, given that everybody had to stop and talk. And you know, it was clear they weren't talking about the numbers.
Right.
They were talking about either a church meeting some other thing that's happening on the side. And, you know, I was moved by the seemingly, you know, boundaryless time you were willing to give each and every individual that you ran into. Mm-hmm. And sounds like that's a spirit that you carry throughout the, mm-hmm. you know, the breadth and depth of your career. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on behalf of all the people that have had the opportunity to take that, and we really want to kind of take that and put it on a, you know, in a poster frame, if you will, you know, as, you know, true value-centered leadership that encourages, that is kind of the magic, the secret sauce behind strong business performance, at least from my observation as the case study that you are that's sitting in front of us. You know, I applaud that, and I thank you, you know, for setting that example for other leaders.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we, you know, are kind of having this conversation and the merits of what that means for organizations to be able to embrace that type of spirit, you know, is there anything that you would say, you know, more specifically for organizations that have that kind of leadership, and you're trying to build that kind of spirit within those leaders, mm-hmm. is there anything that you would, you know, encourage either regarding things to do within the culture, mm-hmm. or, you know, how to embrace, you know, those types of transformations from a talent perspective? Is there anything that kind of comes to mind that you would encourage them to do?
Well, one thing I would say is people who are in leadership roles, mm-hmm. Need to be really, really honest about who's working for them and their contributions to the organization. One of the more difficult things as a leader is to make decisions on who's on the team and, you know, where you need to have upgrading talent and that sort of thing. It's one of the things that early in my career I struggled with. But, you know, as I've gotten further along in my career, I am, you know, very honest about, you know, who's making contributions versus elsewise or otherwise. I reward the best performers. The one thing I have no problem doing is writing a check to someone based on performance. But at the same time, if someone is not contributing, having an honest conversation and then making a change if needed. But doing it in a very humane way, and so it's no surprise or anything like that, and given an opportunity to improve. And so as I've had more experience doing that, it's become a little more comfortable. Kind of going back to the point of reward, I'll just give you a quick funny example. One of the things that I had in place, and this goes back to the IRP and mm-hmm. in particular the revenue
mm-hmm.
growth,
mm-hmm.
is I have a policy in the company where any employee, I mean absolutely any employee that brings new business, we give them a percentage of our profits for a period of time. And I lose no sleep writing a check for that. but it helps permeate throughout the organization that you control your destiny, and you, as you know, if you're entry level or otherwise, you have an opportunity to be aligned with the company's, you know, revenue growth. And so I was reminded of that just last night. I had dinner with a person who was introduced to me by a supervisor here in Atlanta that we ultimately ended up doing business with.
Wow.
And we wrote her, the supervisor, a very substantial check because of the business that came forth from it. And so, you know, being in the position to reward people is one of the, you know, more satisfying things as a leader. And so that's just something that we had in place to be able to continue to grow our business.
What a fascinating story, and definitely something that leaders can emulate, that, you know, kind of have the opportunity to make the observations of what have been critical success factors for yourself. You know, so we're, you know, kind of at a point, and we are all cheerleaders for the success that you've had.
Thank
and
you.
You're at this major milestone in your career, mm-hmm. you know, having, you know, completed another, you know, big success. You know, what's next for you? Like, you know, the people want to know. You know, everyone wants to know, like, what's the next big milestone that you're looking to have happen?
Yeah, so years ago, when I was working on my invention, it materialized into a patent. The patent issued in late 2010. So the patent is a legal monopoly for 20 years. And, you know, 6 years have passed already, roughly a little bit more than 6 years. And so I realized at this juncture, I need to really, you know, work on licensing that.
Okay.
And I'm really, really excited about that. Really the patent is on time value of money for investing, and huge potential in the brokerage industry, as well as the ETFs, exchange traded funds. And so I am doing a couple of things right now. One is, I kind of think of it as spring cleaning, where you have an opportunity to just kind of reassess things. It's like with spring cleaning, you find things that you've forgotten that are important and you want to, you know, do more of and bring forth. But there's also the opportunity to get rid of things as well. And so I'm kind of going through that right now. But then I'm looking forward to being able to spend very concentrated time working on licensing the patent. And so that's what I'm going to be very mindful of over, you know, the next months and potentially years, and see what happens. And so stay tuned. That's next.
That's really exciting, as someone who's, you know, had the opportunity to get just a glimpse at your story to date. I look forward to that being another great success for you, certainly scaled on a level that brings the, you know, market innovation that you that you have in mind for it. I have no doubt that it will be. So, you know, we're rooting for you.
Okay.
And to the extent that, you know, any and all or even just me can help in your pursuit of that, definitely let us know, because you have huge and enormous fans in just being the example of leader and businessman and just overall humanitarian that we like to be able to support and see do well, because the values that you embrace and how we want to be able to always see examples of that prosper.
Okay.
So thank you so much.
Sure.
And I really appreciate you getting up with me here, you know, at Old Dark 40.
Sure.
To come spend some time with us down here in the office. I have really enjoyed this conversation. I imagine our listeners have as well. I thank you all for joining us today. We're going to sign off say goodbye to Cyril. Thank you again for joining us. We will rejoin you the same time next week with a second part from this of this conversation with another executive that will bring us insights, Lamar Chesney. And so with that, I encourage you to have a great and glorious, prosperous day. And remember to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo.
Learning from my past.